everyone, and welcome to the Outdoor Citizen Podcast, episode number 73. Thanks for tuning in. Your host today, Marty Jones, produced and edited by Owen Woods. And our guest today is Bree Robles, a cross-country running champion. And we want to be sure to thank Don Richmond for the music that you heard during the podcast, and Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's birds. So we have Brianna Robles, Bree, to those who know her, here as a guest today. Bree is a national champion cross-country runner running for Adams State and has just within the last year become a professional as well. She has a sponsor and is attending events and running races for her sponsor. So Bree, thanks a lot for joining us today on the podcast.
Yeah, I'm happy to be here.
So tell us a little bit about how you got started running.
Oh, how much time do we have?
Oh, not that long, maybe. But you're pretty young, so.
So briefly, I just kind of used to be a soccer player, began doing track during the summer for conditioning, kind of did a couple of races, figured out I wasn't that bad at the sport, kind of liked the idea of just like, you know, being kind of independent in a way and being able to like kind of have more control. So that's what one thing I really liked about running, kind of stuck to it, kept, you know, building up into longer distances, and then eventually left soccer behind and moved forward with running. And here we are. I mean, I was able to get a full scholarship at Adams State and had a great 7-year run there. And now moving forward, it's finally paid off, and I'm running professionally for Hanson Brooks. So it's been a quite long journey, but a good one.
Yeah, and you've had so much success in your relatively short running career. What do you love about running besides the independence?
I would have to say that it comes a lot of like self-discipline and motivation, and also especially just being one kind of with like the environment, because I'm typically out there at like 6 in the morning, 7 in the morning by myself, because I'm still currently training by myself. And I kind of just learned to really appreciate like what's around me and stuff, and being able to value like the San Luis Valley. I feel like being caught up more so on like being at the Adams State cross country team, you know, we spend a lot of time like more in the indoor track, because it's like, oh, it's too cold and we don't want to go outside. But with this new coach that I have, he's really big on like, no matter what the weather's like, just layer up and go out there, because you got to be prepared for race day no matter what happens. So lately I'm just out there if it's snowing, if it's raining, if it's sunny, and kind of just really like enjoying, you know, being in the moment and watching the different scenery, as well as the cows. I love watching cows when I run, so that's one thing I do love.
Well, and speaking to the being outdoors early and in all kinds of weather, I have seen you recently on some pretty chilly mornings as you run down to the riparian park and through the park. It's what's the secret to being comfortable when you run outdoors at temperatures below freezing?
Typically when I wake up in the morning, I kind of take a little glance at like, you know, the weather app and kind of figure out what I want to wear that day. I really hate wearing leggings, if I'm being quite honest. I just don't like the way they feel when I'm running. But obviously with at a certain point, you got to layer up. So typically it's like, if it's like 50 degrees, I'm like, okay, I think I can still like go out in shorts and I'll just layer up more on the top. But if it's closer to like 35 and below, that's when I'm just like, well, we really have to put on some leggings today. And so I'll put on a pair of leggings as like, you know, for the bottoms. And then typically for me, I get cold more in my upper body. So I try to like have like a base layer and then another layer on top, and then a jacket that kind of, you know, encloses it all. And then always wearing a pair of gloves and a headband for sure.
Do you wear for your outer layer, your jacket, are you wearing something that is windproof or wind resistant at least, or something that's more fleecy?
So the inner layers are more fleecy. The outer layer is more like to protect from like, you know, the wetness, like if there's snow or rain or like wind. So the outer layer is typically like a windbreaker or just kind of like a normal like zip up jacket that's not fleece, kind of just like a little same material as like a windbreaker, I would say, but it's more like a puffer jacket. That's what I was trying to, not too puffy because you're running. Brooks has like this like puffer jacket that you can like wear, and it's pretty thin enough but warm enough, so it kind of can enclose all of the heat that you're building when you're running.
And do you have to shed clothes halfway through the run?
Typically it depends how long I'm going. So the other day, like for example, I did a workout and the day was snowing. So I was full on layered up with two pants on, and then like three layers on my upper body. But when I do a workout, I don't want to be like too resistant, and then you tend to get hot because you're putting in
a lot of effort.
Yes.
Yeah.
So afterwards, I kind of switched out my shoes to my workout shoes, shedded the pants, and was down to like maybe two layers, a long sleeve, and then like just a light jacket on top. And some of the people that were out there on the walks, walking their dogs, were like, "Where are your pants? You're going to freeze." And I'm just like, "I'll be fine. I'm running fast enough that I'll warm up." But a lot of people sometimes when I'm wearing shorts are like, "You're crazy. You're going to freeze." And I'm just like, "I'll be okay, I think."
Yeah, my friends and I who walk dogs out at the park frequently comment when we see folks like you out there in shorts and we're all pretty bundled up, think, "Man, she is really tough. You know, she is really strong." And you are, but, you know, you're also working much harder than we are while we're walking. So I have to ask about feet, because when I'm riding my bicycle and the temperature is, say, 35 or below, my feet and hands are the ones that get cold. I can take care of the hands with appropriate gloves, maybe a liner underneath a pair of gloves. But the feet, how do you keep your feet warm enough while you're running?
Well, I typically in general like to wear like really thick socks. So that's kind of just something I do. I wear like a crew sock. So it kind of like covers up to like, you know, ankle length, a little bit over ankle length. And they're pretty thick. And I mostly do that not just for the cold, but for to be comfortable when I'm running. Because, I mean, my shoes have like a lot of support, but as well, it just gives me a little extra cushioning while I'm running. So I kind of just wear cotton thick socks when I run. I know some people like don't like those because then you can get like blisters and things like that, but that's just what I prefer. I do know like they also do make like thermal running socks. I've never attempted to use those, but that is an option for people if they want to look into that.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure you're wearing Brooks shoes, right?
Yes.
are the shoes water repellent at all? Is there a liner in there? Because, well, you just got back from a race that mm-hmm. you said was pretty muddy and pretty wet. Did your feet get soaked or
not one
stay
bit.
Pretty dry?
They were pretty dry. I also, like, I will say that, like, most of Brooks' stuff is, like, pretty well built for, like, water resistance. Like, a lot of their jackets are, like, water resistant. Like, I wore one jacket the whole time I was there in Portland. It was just, like, a nice, like, thin like windbreaker and didn't get a single drop of rain. It didn't seep through into my clothes or anything. Same thing with the shoes. A lot of the shoes are really like water repellent, like the material they use on the outside, like rain doesn't like, or snow doesn't like sneak into your shoe. And my shoes were really muddy from this weekend, but they were dry. There was no wet socks afterwards.
Oh, wow. That's great. Okay. So we've talked about some of the apparel for running during the winter and the colder months. Do you have to do any sort of mental preparation to convince yourself that it's time to go out and get a run in?
Yes, especially sometimes in the morning when you like wake up, the alarm goes off, my cats are in the bed with me, and just like I look at the weather app and I'm like, "Oh my God, it's like 15 degrees right now. I'm not ready to do this." But like I said, it comes down back to like being like disciplined and just like knowing why I'm doing this. And I always tell myself, like, I don't have to do this. I want to do this. So it kind of like gets me out of bed. Like, I'm doing this for myself because I have big goals and aspirations, and that's just enough to get me out the door. It's always the first like 5 minutes, I would say, are always rough, but then you kind of just get into it, embrace it, and before you know it, the run's over. So
good. And what about fueling up and staying hydrated? What do you do? Is there anything that you do differently during the winter months as opposed to summer months for that?
I will say in the summer, I have to stop a lot more for water and stuff. But right now I'm like currently doing like, you know, when I have like longer runs and stuff, I kind of put like some gels into my pocket, as well as like, I have like a little flask that like folds, and you can put that as well. I put it into my pocket and I carry that with me just in case. I hardly ever have to resort to like drinking water because I'm pretty hydrated before I go out there, and the cold doesn't necessarily make me too thirsty. But I will say I don't know if it's because I'm trying to keep warm that I get a little bit more hungry along the way. So I do like occasionally will like take like a little gel when I'm running, just to kind of get me through the rest of the run.
Yeah. And the good thing about the gels, they're pretty easy, pretty fast, and they are moist. So you do get a little additional moisture to assist with the hydration as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So does it get any easier to run in the cold? Have you found that now that it's December as opposed to November, the longer you go into the winter months, does it get a little bit easier to convince yourself?
I think you kind of just like adapt to it. You kind of get used to it. It becomes a routine and you're able to just move through it. Like I said, the other day when it was like snowing, I had no bother by it. I was just like, all right, I have this workout, I'm going to do it and it's going to be great. And it was, and it's just kind of just like knowing that you have these things that you want to accomplish, these things you want to do. So I think it's all depends on your mindset. You know, the more optimistic you are, the better it's going to be to get through these cold days.
So you were talking earlier about waking up in the morning and you have your cats with you, and it's kind of hard to leave those cats. Have you ever considered taking them along on a run?
No, I don't think my cat Kylo, he's a big boy. I don't think he will last very long. And Lola, she's too fast. I'd be too scared to actually take her outside because she might just zoom out the door. But
you know, they do make harnesses for
yes,
cats.
Yes, I do have them. I do take them to the park sometimes on a leash monitored because I'm too scared to lose them because they've been indoor cats for quite some time. But I will say Kylo does like to go outside. Lola's kind of... She's getting there, but she's not as curious as I would say. Like Kylo loves to be outside and just sit on the grass. I haven't taken him out in the snow yet, but.
So you don't have a dog though?
No.
So no running with dogs?
No running with dogs.
Do you ever get concerned about dogs outside when you're running if there are dogs that are not on leash?
Occasionally, yes. Especially, I mean, even sometimes like dogs on the leash, because you never know like how they're gonna react with other people because each dog is like different. So sometimes I always just try to approach with care. Like if I see a dog, I'm like, oh, a puppy, like I'm always excited to see it. But you also just have to be a little bit cautious because you're not sure how the dog's gonna react with other people. I haven't really ran into many dogs like who are not on leashes. Most people have them on leashes, or if they're not, they're kind of pretty well-behaved dogs, so they just kind of want to come and get like a little pet from you and go on with their days. The only issues I've had is like sometimes people have like really like long leashes and they're not like they don't retract them, so sometimes I'm just like their dog is like halfway up while they're back there and I'm like either I'm gonna trip with this dog's leash because it's gonna get excited or something. That's something like I'm a little like kind of aware of too. I'm like that leash is a little long, and if this dog kind of comes towards me it might take me out, but just some things to be like cautious of.
Well, it sounds like you have a good head on your shoulders and you're paying close attention, not just looking at cows, but
yes,
but paying attention to your surroundings.
Yes.
Well, what are your plans for the future?
Moving forward, I'll be moving to Michigan in January.
So, ooh, that's a fine time of year to move to Michigan.
And right in the winter cold. They have been receiving a lot of snow and stuff, but surprisingly, the first couple of weeks that I'm there, I'm going to get a flight to Florida because we train back and forth within those months because it's too cold. So we get to go train in Florida. So I'll kind of just be making the move, and then heading to Florida, I think from like January 9th through the 24th, and I'll kind of have a cross country race in between and then a road race. And then after that, I'll be moving forward training for the track, which I'm excited about because I haven't had a PR in a long time. And I'm kind of, I don't know, with just this short amount of time I've already been like doing the training with this team, just kind of just like, you know, has opened like new doors, and I'm very excited to see like what I can do once I hit the track again.
So do you have a preference for cross country versus track for your long distance running?
Yeah, so I would always say the track, but this past weekend changed my perspective. Like, I had never ran a 10K on a cross country course, and despite it being like a muddy course, I was having the time of my life. Like, I was like, maybe I should have gave cross country a chance, or maybe they should just made it a 10K for me. Because it seems like the longer it was, like, the better it like felt, because I just had more space to like move up, versus in college we only run a 6K, so I think I would have benefited if it was a little bit longer.
Do you have aspirations for Olympic trials coming up?
Yes, so I'm not sure yet when I'll make the jump to marathon. I kind of have an itch. I'm getting like, ooh, excited. I see people doing it. I kind of want to do it, but I also am still young in the sense of like marathon, and I'm like, I don't want to like rush into it. I definitely want to be 100% mentally like something I want to do, because it's going to be a hard training session, but I think maybe next year I kind of have my eyes set on doing the Houston half. That's something I kind of want to do, especially because it's in Texas, so my family can come out and support. And then after that goes, we kind of can maybe dabble and see what marathon I'll do. And I mean, ideally, I would like to qualify for the Olympic trials and the marathon. So we'll see what's in store.
Well, best wishes. That sounds great. Do you have anything else that you'd like to share with our listeners?
No, I think that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Okay. Well, great. Thanks. Bree Robles, national champion long distance runner from Adams State. And I should also mention that she's working here at the Alamosa Citizen as well. So in fact, she had to take off her press tag to come do the interview. So thank you, Bree, and best luck in the future.
Thank you.
We're going to take a quick break now to hear from our sponsors. You're listening to the Outdoor Citizen Podcast. We'll be right back.
It's been a tough year for many folks in Monta Vista. As the holidays approach, a lot of us are feeling tired or anxious, but good things are still happening all around us. This year alone, the Lohr Foundation has partnered with your friends and neighbors to bring more than 75 community-driven projects to life, making things a little brighter here at home. Lohr Fund's ideas designed and led by Monta Vista locals of all ages, no nonprofit experience required. Whether it's helping neighbors save time or money, supporting families, or creating something that brings people together, your ideas can make a real impact. All it takes to get started is a simple conversation. And once your idea is approved, most projects receive funding within 30 days. So let's close out the year stronger together. Visit lohrfoundation.org or email yvette@lohrfoundation.org to learn more.
Welcome back to the Outdoor Citizen. We'll give you a few outdoor conditions here. Warm, says the weatherman. La Nina continues to deliver warmer than usual conditions for the San Luis Valley. November 2025 registered as the second warmest November on record, with an average daily temperature of 36.2 degrees Fahrenheit, according to the National Weather Service. Yeah, and I got quite a bit of bicycling in during the month of November because of that warmth. The forecast into the Christmas season remains for a warmer December than what we'd like to see. The start of the new year, 2026, is looking the same, with some chance for moisture right around the end of the year into early 2026. Our friends at the San Juan Nordic Club do report that volunteer groomers were able to groom Rock Creek trails out to the meadows. Just on, I guess it was Friday or Saturday, just a few days ago. It's thin in places, but a good start. Upper trails have been packed, but not groomed yet, according to Suzanne Beauchesne. And my wife and I and a group of others were just up in the Rock Creek area on Sunday. It was nice to actually have to drive through some snow to get up to the upper part of Rock Creek. And now for some news. The Department of the Interior is increasing national park entrance fees for non-residents and international visitors. Launching on January 1, 2026, the annual pass will cost $80 for U.S. residents. For non-residents, that fee is going to jump up to $250. Non-residents without an annual pass will pay a $100 per person fee to enter 11 of the most visited national parks, in addition to the standard entrance fee. The national park passes will be available in a fully digital format through recreation.gov. Visitors will be able to purchase and use their passes instantly, store them on mobile devices, and link them to physical cards for added convenience. According to the Interior Department, digital validation tools and updated training for field staff will ensure faster entry and a smoother visitor experience across the national park system. Visitors to the Great Sand Dunes National Park and Preserve are trending down slightly for 2025. Through November, the Great Sand Dunes has seen 423,364 visitors, down 1.43% year-to-date from 2024. December typically brings another 8,000 or so visitors, one of the lightest months in the 12-month period. The Great Sand Dunes had its highest number of visitors ever in 2021, when 602,613 visitors hit the dunes. And Owen, just in the last week, if you looked out toward the sand dunes, It was great to see some snow up on the upper dune field.
I love seeing especially those southern-facing dunes. They just, it creates a really cool effect from this part of the valley.
Yeah, and I should mention, if you've never had an opportunity to visit the Great Sand Dunes National Park and Preserve during the winter months, typically on the drive-in, you can see herds of deer, sometimes elk, and it's a great time to walk on the dunes.
Yeah,
because the sand is a little more firm when it's nice and wet and chilly. It's still, on a sunny day, it's still plenty warm to be out there. It's a good idea to follow Bree's advice and kind of layer up, you know, but still, it's a great time to visit the dunes.
It's totally different. Everybody thinks the best time to go is in the summer, and yeah, it probably is, but in the wintertime, it's totally different. It's just as cool.
Oh, yeah. Even more cool.
Bring a sled or two. Ups the game.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. A study from the University of Colorado found that the pika, a small Rocky Mountain-dwelling mammal, is on the decline due to climate change. The study, published in the journal Arctic, Antarctic, and Alpine Research, wildlife biologists found that warming rocks and tundra areas are becoming too hot for the small animals to have habitable space. Warm temperatures increase the pika's body temperature, and they use the rocks for shelter. But at higher elevation, those temperatures are increasing, leading to dwindling habitat. Some studies have suggested that the pika will be one of the first Rocky Mountain-dwelling animals to go extinct by the end of the century. In some areas, the study suggests, pika populations have decreased by more than 50%. That's a sad thing, Owen. You know, I'm sure you've been up in the mountains and seen pikas.
Oh, yeah.
They are such cute little animals.
Yep.
You can always hear them before you see them.
And defiant little creatures, man. When you're too close to their home, they'll let you know.
Oh, yeah.
They don't care.
Yeah. Well, let's hope that that prediction doesn't come to pass. Mm-hmm. While reports of bears doing mischievous things have slightly increased across Colorado, it was an average year for bear mischief in the San Luis Valley. We had an average year for conflict in the San Luis Valley, says State Wildlife Manager Rick Bezagodia. We once again dealt with situations where bears simply took advantage of easily avoidable situations and became used to easy access to human foods. Trash remains the leading source of conflict, and fruit trees continue to attract bears. We need the public to be vigilant about securing trash and picking up fallen fruit, unquote. Colorado Parks and Wildlife estimates there are 17,000 to 20,000 bears in Colorado, and every year the majority of incident reports involve bears trying to access human food sources. There were 5,259 bear reports between January 1 and December 1 of this year, up from 4,996 for that same time period in 2024. This year's total ranks as the highest since 5,392 in 2019. Colorado gray wolves continue to move throughout the state, showing activity in watersheds near population centers. Colorado Parks and Wildlife clarified how watersheds are highlighted as wolves move in and out of them. In November, CPW's gray wolf activity map showed much of the San Luis Valley's watershed lit up with wolf activity. The map seemingly showed movement from Rio Grande County through Alamosa County and into Costilla County. A lone individual briefly stepped foot in the westernmost portion of Rio Grande County in what is named the City of Alamosa Rio Grande Watershed on a Hydrology Unit Code 10 map, CPW said in a Facebook post earlier in November. While the lone gray wolf was present in the westernmost portion of this watershed in Rio Grande County, even just briefly, there has been no collared wolf activity in the other counties. Additionally, CPW noted, there has been no collared wolf activity in any part of the San Luis Valley since October 23rd. And now a look at some upcoming outdoor events. The San Juan Nordic Club is hosting the Winter Wildland Alliance's Backcountry Film Festival on December 12th at the Monte Vista Church Project to promote winter recreation and raise funds for grooming efforts. Doors open at the Church Project, which is located at 256 South Broadway Street, at 5:30 p.m. Films will start at 6 p.m. There's a brief intermission at 7 p.m. You can get your tickets at the link in the San Luis Valley Outdoor Report on alamosacitizen.com. And I know we have tickets to go to that. I think there's going to be at least some refreshments available for that film festival as well. And on December 21st at the Narrow Gauge Book Cooperative, which is at 602 Main Street, from 3:30 to 4:30 p.m., there's a trinket exchange. It's advertised as a Crow Party Trinket Exchange. And why is it named Crow Party, Owen?
I think because if you give a crow a trinket, they'll give you something back.
Well, that's very kind of them.
Worthy to
celebrate. How generous.
Worthy to celebrate.
Indeed. So bring a gently used trinket to trade with other corvid-minded individuals. Think things that sparkle, shine, or are just satisfying to the part of our brain that goes, oh, I like this. No need to buy a new item. And please, no clothing items. Jewelry, pens, stickers, crystals, tchotchkes, and other oddities are perfect for this gathering. If you don't have anything and would still like to come, we'll have a few extras on hand for you to choose as your offering. Water, tea, and coffee will be available. Sounds like a fun event. Pretty cool. And mark your calendars if you haven't already done so. The Rio Frio Ice Fest is just a little over a month away. It hosts one of America's unique 5K races. The race kicks off at 10 a.m. on Saturday, January 24th, 2026. This spectacular 5K race is conducted entirely on the frozen Rio Grande. And with the amount of water in the Rio right now, this year's race course could be a good one. And I'm sure you've noticed, Owen, as you walk along the levees and see the Rio, there are some ice chunks floating down the Rio right now.
And the Blanca Vista ponds are looking pretty frozen over, so I think that's a good sign. It's a good sign.
And Bree can attest to the fact that the pond out by the riparian park is getting covered with some ice as well.
Nice.
So let's continue to do our snow dances and our cold weather dances. Bree runs in the cold. You can get out and run in the cold too. If you have any questions about the race, please contact the race director, Dalton Carleo, and you can reach him at dcarleo@alamosa.gov. For more information, go to rioraces.com. And I should point out that if the conditions are appropriate, the San Juan Nordic Club will be sponsoring on the evening before a Luminaria cross-country ski. If there's not enough snow, it'll be a cross-country walk, but something going on that evening, January 23rd. So that brings us to the end of this episode of the Outdoor Citizen podcast. The Outdoor Citizen is produced and edited by Owen Woods, published by the alamosacitizen.com. You can listen to the show wherever you stream your podcasts. If you have an outdoor adventure you'd like to share, or if there are topics you'd like to hear about in a future episode, send an email to info@alamosacitizen.com. As always, we want to thank Don Richmond for his song Sea Turtle and Daniel Boyce for the sounds of the valley's birds. Until next time, this is Marty Jones, encouraging you to get outside. Don't let the winter keep you indoors. There's plenty to do that's fun outside right now during the winter months. Thanks for tuning in, and have a great holiday season.